Hello, hello, and welcome to another episode of the Daily French Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined by what we call the Ministry of Truth back in the old office, that being Mr. Terence Corrigan. Terence, is it all right? How's it going?
Things are fine. Got a bit of a water interruption at the moment, but otherwise, all right.
The joys of living in one of South Africa's great metros. And also, Mr. Marius Root. Marius, how are you?
Nice, guys. Yeah, the rhythms of a slowly failing state, eh?
Yeah, gently rocking us to sleep.
Exactly.
Anyway, for those of you who don't know, this is, of course, the last week of the Daily French Show for the year. Our last episode will be probably coming out on either Thursday or Friday, and that'll be a special with outgoing IRR CEO Frans Grenier and incoming IRR CEO John Endres. So don't miss that. And also, please, if you enjoy us, review us, like us, subscribe to our channel, all those kind of things. Because, while we're on hiatus, the algorithm will punish us greatly. And so, by boosting our metrics beforehand, you can help us withstand the storm of our holiday. Anyway, let us go on to the news today, which is, of course, the President, El Presidente Cyril Ramaphosa last night. Spoke to the nation, and you could see that everyone was kind of, tense. It was almost like this instinctual tensing up. My girlfriend went to the shops, and she said that everyone was just piling in buying booze. And as it turned out, it wasn't necessary. Cyril Ramaphosa did not announce a ban on alcohol, despite many people's fears. And this, but. He did slam many foreign countries from closing their borders to us. So, of course, we haven't yet talked about on the show the so-called Omicron variant. Myself and Gabriel Krause did a Two Crickets in a Thorn Tree podcast on that, which is up on the dailyfriend.co today. We just went into a little bit about what we know about it so far. The answer is actually not much. Anyway, so Cyril spent a lot of time attacking foreign countries for all closing their borders to us since the detection of the variant here. There's been an enormous number of countries that have placed travel restrictions on South Africa since South Africa announced that we had found this variant of COVID. And as far as I know, there's a lot of testing and research going on right now to determine whether Omicron really is as big of a threat as many people seem to fear that it could be. But the jury is still definitely not in on that one yet. Anyway, what's interesting, though, about Cyril's speech, because we've covered a lot of these on the show over the year, and it looks like the politics really has changed on this. If this had happened, I don't know, 6 months ago or something, I can be sure. I mean, before the last the third wave, we got locked down. I'm sure that the president would have locked us down, but this time there were very few extra restrictions placed on us, and this was warmly greeted by many different organizations across South Africa, particularly organizations in the hospitality sector, like the Federated Hospitality Association of SA, and the South African Travel Agents Association. We're all very happy about the decision not to lock down further. And so, I guess my question to you, Terence, is why do you think Ramaphosa decided to take a much lighter hand this time? This is what we wanted him to do for a long time, but what do you think finally changed his approach?
Well, I think it could be a couple of things there. One of them is that South Africa was took enormous amount of reputational damage because this virus has been associated with South Africa. Now, I think that love him or hate him, Piers Morgan probably gave the best response to that by saying on social media that this was discovered by brilliant South African scientists working around the clock. It's not a uniquely South African thing. But I think in part for South Africa to be seen to be wielding a sledgehammer against the problem would in a sense justify all those travel restrictions. I think more prosaically, but very much linked to it, is that there's just the economic cost of previous lockdowns is just not sustainable. I mean, you're talking about the largest fallen GDP projected since we have records. You know, maybe the Boer War was worse, but you know, a 7% drop on the back of an underperforming economy that never quite recovered from the financial crisis a decade earlier. That's not a place you want to be. And you know, sooner or later, there's likely to be an accounting for that.
So, Maurice, I see Moonchild in our live comments here suggested that Cyril might have decided to take a much lighter approach because of the ANC's pretty disappointing electoral results in the local government elections. Do you think that was a factor at all? What are your thoughts on politics?
Yeah, I think it was definitely a factor. I think the ANC got quite a big fright now. It's going to be interesting to see how they react. But it's also a luck that the government is now quite upset that there have been travel restrictions placed in South Africa, which are definitely unscientific. It's a political move. We've seen how, for example, Angola has been placed in the UK's red list, even though they're, 3,000 km from South Africa. While Belgium, which is just across the channel, Angola doesn't have any Omicron cases confirmed. Belgium, which is across the channel, has had cases from this new variant confirmed. They're not in any red list, nor is Israel, nor is Australia, where Omicron's been confirmed. There's no Omicron confirmed in Zambia or Zimbabwe, but they're on the red list. And the president is rightly pissed off about that, and I think a lot of South Africans are. But for me, it just shows this weird, double think you get within the government. Joe Pachla, the Minister of Health, was on, he was talking about the new variant and said, well, one way to stop the variant spreading is maybe to ban interprovincial travel. So you can't complain that the world is going to, you know, block South Africa out because you can't stop this variant coming, which you cannot. Once the thing's discovered, it's already been spread all over the place. You're not going to stop it unless you're an island in the middle of the Pacific, like New Zealand or something. You know, you're not going to be able to stop this thing. It's impossible. But then the Minister of Health says, perhaps we should, stop the interprovincial travel. And it's just this weird double think. Like, you know, if you can't keep Omicron from South Africa out of the UK, you're definitely going to keep Omicron from Gauteng outside of, up to the Western Cape or KwaZulu-Natal, or whatever the case is. And I think so many people, I think most people are happy to sanitize, wear masks and so on. But I think people are really hurtful with the other restrictions. And if there was any barrier to provincial travel, people would make plans to go find back roads. You know, they'd forge things to say that they're allowed to be on the road and travel between provinces and so on. So, and I do think it was probably the correct, the president made the right, kind of speech last night. Still not sure we need things like curfews and so on. But there's not much more you can do. COVID is already endemic.
Yeah, the curfew is something that particularly gets under my skin because...
Yeah, it doesn't stop anything.
Let's just say that there's a lot more evidence for travel bans, and there is some. Our colleague Gabriel has defended them a bit. But there's a lot more evidence supporting that than there is supporting curfews. Yeah. Why do we still have a curfew?
But I think any of these things, COVID it's endemic amongst humans now. You know, we're going to have all these variants, whether... You know, we have most of the population vaccinated or not. We're going to carry on having these things. We've got to start living it like it's a flu or a cold. And it's probably, from what I've read, that viruses over time, they generally start becoming less virulent. They might spread to more people. They might have a higher R0 number, but they're not going to make you as sick and so on. And as far as I know, the virus that caused the Spanish flu in 1920 is still with us. But now all that happens is you get flu from it whenever, and then you recover from it. And that's probably what's going to happen with COVID. Over time, COVID is going to be a virus that humans are never going to get rid of. And, you know, most of us will have immunity from vaccines or from previous infections.
What's quite interesting to me, though, is that there are some therapeutics in the works that seem pretty promising. I know there was one by the company, I think, Merck. But that one, the data on that is actually less enthusiastic than they originally thought. But there was another one from Pfizer, which in the sample study had pretty much prevented not a single person who had been given the therapeutic and then because they had COVID died, which is pretty promising. And it suggests that we could be on the cusp of a whole range of therapeutic COVID viral antiviral medications, which might affect a lot of diseases that have nothing to do with COVID, which could be a good thing. And I think that once that comes in, any justification whatsoever, even the thinnest justification for some of the harsh COVID stuff we've seen now is going to be pretty much bunk. If you can just take a pill that makes you feel better after 2 days, you know, there's really no point in locking this one down. Terence, any final thoughts from you?
No, look, I just think this is we're probably looking at another at another year or so of this at the very least. Get used to it.
Yeah, so there was also some discussion from Cyril about mandatory vaccination, but we'll have to wait and see whether that actually comes to anything significant. I'm sure the government is going to put in something, but we will critique that policy as it becomes clear what exactly they're planning. But for now, I think we're going to wait on that one. So we did notice it, but that's why we're not really saying anything about it. Okay, so that's El Presidente's speech done. Let's talk a little bit about our much beleaguered Minister of Transport, who seems to be in a social media spat every 15 minutes. I know that Times Live, which seems to cover every time anyone sneezes on Twitter, always is covering Fikile Mbalula getting into Twitter fights with people. Anyway, Transport Minister Fikile Mbalula said on Friday that he had received messages from what he called captains of industry in the rail sector that they are going to disinvest from PRASA, that is the South African Passenger Rail Agency of South Africa, unless the mess is sorted out. And he went on a bit of a spiel about how things are not getting better at PRASA, about how he had put in a lot of effort to make sure that things were better there and that they had set up a lot of things to help PRASA get out of its problem, but it still hadn't managed to recover, that they had a modernization project underway that he expected would improve things at on our rail systems, and that he'd given very strict instructions to get a whole bunch of routes operating again that have fallen into disrepair, basically, because either the tracks have been stolen or the trains are broken. It was kind of interesting, though, because reading his comments, you get the feeling that he's like a opposition politician. He's talking almost as though he has nothing to do with what PRASA, with how PRASA is run. You know, he kind of said, I don't understand why people are, why the management of PRASA aren't fixing things, because we've given them everything they need to do it. Anyway, Maurice, what do you make of the story? What do you make of the state of PRASA?
Yeah, you know, it tells you something about the state of South Africa that we've seen this destruction of our railway infrastructure. And I think part of it is maybe because we are a low-trust society. So people, it's fine to go destroy public infrastructure because people feel it doesn't really belong to them. I mean, you don't see in most other countries, you don't see this kind of destruction of public infrastructure and how people have been, you know, stealing the metal for, you know, for scrap and the copper wires and so on. You see photos of various railway stations around Gauteng and see what it was, what it looked like even 10 or 15 years ago. You look at it now, it looks like it was, you know, in the middle of Berlin at the end of 1945, or in the middle of 1945, rather. You know, it's just completely destroyed. There's almost nothing left. And there's definitely something needs to be done. Lots of companies have to start are using trucks and so on now to transport their goods, but railways are much more efficient way often, and it obviously doesn't damage roads if you're using trains instead of trucks and so on. You know, it's less congestion, and I just think it's something that for the country to be successful, I think we need quite a well functioning railway system, which we definitely don't have at the moment. There's also recently news that one of the power stations, I can't remember which one, I think it might be Kusile, one of them, Eskom had built a railway to transport coal to wherever it was. That had been vandalized, and it seems to have been actually vandalized by insiders at Eskom because they want to keep, that people want to keep the contract to transport coal and so on using their trucks. And so obviously you destroy the railway, then you can't use the railway, then you have to use the trucks, which the contract now exists for. So yeah, it's an issue, but there's also two other issues here. I mean, Fikile Mbalula, I mean, it's typical actually of a lot of ANC politicians. Throw their hands in the air and like, you know, we're like, oh geez, this is terrible. Now why don't this ANC sort things out? Like when you have the ANC start playing march on the Thuli House, like fix Eskom, like you guys have been running the country for 27 years, you know?
Maybe right, this seems to be a line they developed like in the 90s, which said something exactly. Which went something along the lines of we're in office but not in power, we're in government exactly. but not in power. And the ANC has just never been able to shake that way of talking about the country, sort of as and though they're passive observers.
Exactly. And look, still a lot of the problems in South Africa we have are because of the legacy of apartheid, but the ANC has been in the power now for nearly a generation. And a lot of the problems in South Africa are now because of ANC governance. And you can't, you know, dismiss that. And just on a final note, it also tells you something about South African journalism that, you know, what Fikile Mbalula puts on Twitter, you know, it's covered by the newspapers. And it's really something, you know, just the very low, you know, low effort journalism. You go into Twitter and say, oh no, some random person with 10 followers called Fikile Mbalula an idiot. Let's write a story about it.
Yeah, the story, those headlines are always something along the lines of what is it? Twitter is not having any of Fikile Mbalula's thoughts on this issue. And you just think,
Mzansi drags razzmatazz, and it's like three guys who say he's an idiot.
No, it's so stupid.
Yeah.
Terence, so I want to focus in. So Maurice has talked a bit about transport of goods, especially when it comes to rails, the rail system. But I want to focus a little bit on the passenger sector, because it's of course, you know, what the sort of process is supposed to be doing. And I think some South Africans, particularly middle class South Africans, might be confused to think that we actually have passenger rail for our big cities that isn't Gautrain, but we do. It's just mostly in total disrepair or dysfunction, and this seems to have accelerated and gotten much worse during the lockdown. When I remember the Daily Maverick did some pretty good reporting on with really good pictures about just, you know, passenger stations of every single piece of rail stolen, so that the trains just can't operate anymore. I know they've had rails that keep getting burned. To finish this thought, I remember some of these discussions back when Gautrain was being proposed and costed. And I think the DA at the time said it would be much better to spend the money on Prasa rather than spending it on a brand new rail system. I just want your thoughts generally on the state of passenger rail.
Yeah. South Africa, at least middle class South Africa, is a motorized society. We drive everywhere. We don't have many of the alternatives that our counterparts abroad have. You know, like an extensive bus system. Anyone spent time in Europe knows about that. Now, commuter rail is a big thing. It connects. Because it's sort of dedicated. Dedicated pathways and the technology and whatever, you know, you can get from point A to point B very, very quickly. It's efficient. There's areas of we have a great deal of urban sprawl all over the world. Taiwan has a slightly different, but it's underground system, but that is now also connected to a high speed rail between the cities. So When I went to Taiwan a few years ago for my brother's funeral, I literally got off the plane. I was taken to an MRT as an underground station from which you could directly connect onto onto this bullet train to get halfway across the island. That of course takes a lot of takes engineering and it takes maintenance. When you have a pothole in the road, the road is still usable. When your track twists, then your problem is exponentially more serious. It's also something that does a great deal for people's employment prospects, because you are able to live at a significant remove, which is a problem we have because of the erstwhile spatial planning. And it is good for property values because it, you know, it reduces those distances. But yes, you know, something has gone dangerously wrong, and I use the word dangerous advisedly. You know, people get killed because of it. In part, it's, you know, South Africa is a very disorganized and disorderly society. You know, vandalism is a major problem. But then, I just don't get the sense that the importance of this has ever really been understood. You know, if you want something like a rail system to work, you need rail executives to understand it. You need engineers who can maintain it. And it's sort of, I think at the root of this, as with most of our state-owned enterprises, is something very simple. You can throw all the money you want at it, but if you insist on keeping some sort of political fingers in the pie, it's not going to work. It's that simple. You know, we've thrown billions, if not trillions, of rands after, you know, Eskom and Prasa and SAA. You know, and I'm not sure really what we've got back for it.
No, I think that's exactly right. I like the point you brought up about how we have how rail can help to alleviate the problems of a very sort of spread out city. This is something the ANC brings up all the time. They say, you know, apartheid spatial planning means that our cities are in this bad shape where people have to travel very long distances to find work. Well, I mean, there's another problem for that. Firstly, you know, there isn't much work to find. But the other problem is, of course, you know, as Terence points out, rail is a great way to try and alleviate some of those problems, and yet the passenger rail system has been allowed to fall into sort of total disrepair, and hasn't really been expanded on. In fact, it's regressed in the last couple of years. Maurice, your final thoughts on this issue?
I just want to get a quote from Gustavo Petro, who was mayor of Bogota in Colombia. He said, "A developed country is not a place where the poor have cars; it's where the rich use public transport." And I think that's exactly it.
All right, let us move on to our next topic. And this is sort of moving overseas, but also sort of staying at home. So I must say, it's always a little bit strange when you open up Reuters or one of the news sites. I'd usually check those a couple of times a day. And what do you find but South Africa plastered absolutely everywhere, all over the headlines? Of course, this time it's because of our, you know, Omicron variant and all the freaking out about that. But we are making the news in the United States for a change. Governor Greg Abbott, who is the governor of Texas, tweeted recently that he said the following, quote, "Biden banned travel from South Africa because of the new COVID variant. Immigrants have recently been apprehended crossing our border illegally from South Africa. Biden is doing nothing to stop immigrants from South Africa entering illegally." Now, I don't think there's any reason to think that the governor is not telling the truth here, but this really just seems like trying to tie two news stories together to keep it sort of topical. I don't know. Marius, what do you think of this?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, I'm sure there's been maybe a handful of South Africans who've tried to cross from Mexico into the US. But, you know, just reading a bit earlier, you know, you do get Africans who fly to South America or Central America and then fly across the border in Mexico to get to the US. But the vast majority of them are people from Central Africa and West Africa, so Congolese, Nigerians, Ghanaians, and so on. It's very rarely that you get a South African. And I was also looking at the rejection rates for people who apply to get visas for the US from South Africa. And it's actually quite low. Only about 6% of South Africans who apply for a visa to go to the US get rejected. And that, like, it tells you a couple of things, that most of the people who apply to the US have the means to get there and they can have jobs back in South Africa or in the cases, and that we have quite a low rate of people who abscond when they get to the US and, you know, become illegal immigrants. I was looking, I think Afghanistan is a 70% refusal rate. Because obviously most, you know, they look at a variety of factors, obviously your personal circumstances, but they also look at, you know, are people from this country likely to become legal immigrants and work legally and so on. And obviously with South Africans, it's not, you know, not that common. I don't think, you know, most people will go there. If they do immigrate, they'll go legally and so on. So, but I think, as you say, it's just part of this American kind of culture war, because Abbott is a Republican, Joe Biden's obviously a Democrat. And so, you know, look at this. I mean, of course, it also shows the hypocrisy on both sides, to be honest. I mean, when Donald Trump first had a couple of travel bans, there were a variety of reasons. But I think the first one was he didn't want people to come from countries where a lot of terrorists came from. And then secondly, I think he banned travel from China when we first started hearing about COVID. Democrats were all up in arms about that. And suddenly, from that even less evidence, the U.S. has banned travel from the whole of Southern Africa, basically. So, you know, but it's, you don't see the same kind of uproar from the Democrats, because now it's obviously Democrats in charge. And yeah, it's just usual, hypocrisy. And just, like, you know, I think just part of South Africa just been used as a, as part of this this war now between the Democrats and the Republicans. And, you know, I'd be very surprised if we're seeing hordes of South Africans trying to cross the Rio Grande to get into Texas to work, you know, in like the local taco shop or in the cases.
Yeah, I'm wondering, maybe I should take a crack at it, because apparently our fellow citizens are giving it a bash. I must say, I mean, the U.S. southern border has been a problem over the last couple of years. It's got large numbers of people trying to get into the country, claiming refugee status. It's a bit of a mess. The Obama, Trump, and the Biden administrations have all really struggled to keep it under control, particularly at the moment. Apparently, it seems to be pretty bad, although it's not very well reported on. Terrence, what do you make of Governor Abbott's comments?
Well, this is a resourceful South Africans. Look, there probably is a germ of truth somewhere in there. But I would actually be really interested to see if you could actually put a name on some of them. There's a Johan van der Veste, isn't, or something, who's been apprehended by the border patrol trying to scale the wall. I think in all likelihood it's kind of bolting two narratives together. You're quite correct. From what I've seen, there does seem to be something of a, shall we say, politely an impasse on the United States southern border. On the one hand, you know, you it's become a domestic political issue. The government itself doesn't seem to know whether it actually wants to control this or wants to, throw it open. And I remember, actually, this is going back to, funny enough, when I lived in Taiwan, hearing about some of the oddities that do pitch up on the southern border. And there was concern at that time about, you just needed a few people, affiliated with one Osama bin Laden to sort of use a coyote to get themselves into America. I don't think it's beyond the realm of possibility, but I suspect America probably has a bigger problem with large numbers of people coming you aren't being properly screened for the virus than someone decamping from Brixton, taking a plane to Caracas and then hitchhiking across Colombia to try and realize his American dream.
Europe, I think.
Well, I'm saying, alternatively, you could go and, stay with your schoolmate Mel, who lives over a pub in Manchester. There apparently are a lot of South Africans who have overstayed their visas in that part of the world.
Interesting. All right, I think that's all the time we have for today. We are coming up to half an hour. We hope you enjoyed the show. Thank you very much for watching. We shall see you tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show as we keep wrapping up the year. We hope you enjoyed. I see a lot of interesting comments from people that I'm afraid we don't have time to properly engage with, but keep them coming. And yeah, give the video a like. We'll see you tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone. We'll